As I'm recording this episode this morning here on The Rock on a rainy Monday morning in North Wales. Yes, it's typical for September, August. It's raining yet again. I'm a little bit hungover, but you know what? We had a great night. We had a barbecue last night with some friends, and yeah, we probably had a little bit too much to drink, but we had a great time with our friends Carl and Andrea, and they brought over their five children. Now, these five kids are a result of a blended family. Some of them are Andrea's from a previous marriage, and some of them are Carl's from a previous marriage. And we got to talking about some of the guests that I've had on this podcast. And in fact, I'm really excited to bring you this episode today, part one, with Cindy Wong Brandt, all the way from Taiwan. What Carl was mentioning was that he raised his children in a pretty much a secular, non-religious environment. And one of the things that really struck me in getting to know his kids, and we're talking all the way from the youngest is 10, the oldest is 22, to a person, they are so free from all the hang-ups that are associated with being raised, or should I say indoctrinated, within a controlling religious system by your parents, like I was, like my guest today, Cindy, because we're going to talk about this in this episode today. What happens to children and then later as adults when they're raised in a system, especially evangelicalism, the system that I know the best? I was raised in fundamentalism like Cindy. I was raised in this system, and then later I became a proponent of the system. I was in ministry, I was in academics and teaching, and I was in school forever. It seemed like I have devoted my entire adult life to teaching and ministry. I've served the church for most of my adult life. And now, though, that I've walked away from it in the last 10 or 12 years, and I'm starting to analyze it a bit more objectively, I, along with a lot of other ex-evangelical people, we're starting to see the effects, the toxic effects, the traumatic effects of being raised within a system like evangelicalism. And again, I've said this many times before, this is not just confined to Christianity. We see much of the same symptoms. In fact, this is something Karen Garst and I talked about last year. This is something we see in what we call the Abrahamic religions. There are some striking parallels between Islam, Judaism, and Christianity in terms of the damage, the toxicity that they inflict on many of their followers. Anxiety, depression, sexual hangups are just part and parcel of the symptoms that their followers exhibit. And this is something that Cindy and I are going to be talking about in this episode today. We're going to get into her backstory a little bit in part one. And then next week in part two, we're going to start getting into some of the very specific outcomes, the behavioral issues that kids raised within evangelicalism and these controlling religions start to have, even as children and then later on into their adult life, all kinds of problems and issues as a result of their upbringing. And in particular, next week, what I really appreciate about what Cindy's going to bring is that she's going to offer up some really practical advice on how we as parents, especially if you've got young kids, how you can raise your children in an environment that allows them autonomy and freedom to make their own choices, and how important spirituality actually is. So how can you balance, especially as a parent, how can you balance teaching your kids core values, yet at the same time not indoctrinating them and allowing them the space to develop their own spiritual path, as it were? These are real tough challenges, especially given the indoctrination that we as parents received when we were part of the church. I remember many times I even preached on this, you know, the importance of raising godly children and how important it is to put your children in an environment of learning, education, godly homes, and all the rest of it so that they will come out as great, wonderful Christians later on in their lives. But of course, as we're seeing more and more now, it's the exact opposite that ends up happening. Rather than producing wonderful, godly children, parents who raise their children in such a controlling environment oftentimes produce kids with major anxiety, depression, sexual, relational issues, and all kinds of problems. So it's the exact opposite of what is the intended outcome. How ironic. And then, of course, on top of that problem, you have another aspect, another piece to this whole discussion, and that is, I hear a lot from ex-evangelical parents who have since deconstructed their own faith, but they've got kids who were raised within the system when they were still in fundamentalism and evangelicalism, and now they might have no relationship at all with their kids. How do you go back as a parent and say to your kids, I'm sorry, I apologize for the way that I raised you. I was doing the best that I thought I knew how at the time, but I've heard from several ex-evangelicals that they don't have any relationship anymore with their kids. Their kids are so angry with them for how they raise these children that they don't even have a relationship. And that is a very, very sad thing. And so it's precisely these kind of things that Cindy is really passionate about. She is really into this issue of parenting and allowing your kids autonomy and freedom. And these are the things that we're going to be talking about today and next week as well. Now, I just want to say before I get into the chat with Cindy in part one here that for supporters of this show on Patreon, you can catch a bonus conversation that I've had with Cindy. And this is a great reward for Patreon supporters of this show. In fact, there's a lot of other great bonus conversations I've mentioned before. There's one with Chris Stroop. There's another one with David Hayward, as well as my interaction with David Hayward, some of the points that he made in the two episodes that we did a few weeks ago. So if you want to support this show, it's not only a great way to support independent media like this podcast, but also you can gain access to this bonus material on Patreon. And it's super helpful, I think, for people who are in the process of deconstructing their former faith and wondering, okay, where do I go from here? Well, there's some really practical resources that I'm offering, and I'm always going to be uploading new bonus content on Patreon. So if that sounds interesting to you, you can take a look in the show notes, and there's more information on how to find all of that content on Patreon. All right, so let's go on into it. Here it is, part one with Cindy Wong Brandt, Deconstructing the Predatory Parenting of Evangelicalism, part one. I am so happy to be joined by Cindy Wong Brandt, all the way from Taiwan. Thank you so much for being on the show, Cindy.
I'm really happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we've met through Twitter, and I followed you because obviously we have a lot of common interests in talking about deconstructing evangelicalism, and you have a particular passion, I guess, about parenting and kids who are raised within this sort of evangelical system. You have a book that's coming out as well next February, is it?
Yes, February 2019.
And what is the subject of your book?
So it's called Parenting Forward, How to Raise Children with Justice, Mercy, and Kindness. But a lot of my work, I didn't start out writing about parenting. I started out writing about my faith. And I grew up conservative evangelical. And as I was deconstructing or faith shifting, as I call it, I began to write about that journey. And eventually, I realized a lot of my anxieties and issues with deconstructing really stemmed from the fact that I was not given the autonomy to choose for myself because I was still a child when I was converted into Christianity. And so I just decided, you know, the best thing that I could do to do better, to make life better for the next generation is to talk about these issues and tell the truth of what it's like when you convert a child and how we can parent our children in a way that honors their autonomy spiritually. And of course, that impacts some of the other ways too, their physical autonomy, their emotional autonomy, how we respect children as human beings and give them the dignity and respect that they deserve, because so much of this world is actually very anti-child.
Yes. And as you point out in many of your tweets, children who are raised within this kind of a system, what happens to them when they become adults? I think I responded to one of your tweets the other day when you were saying something about kids are basically being indoctrinated and they don't really have a choice. What happens to them? And I said, well, one of the things that I've seen is they go off to university, for example, and they lose their faith pretty much straight away when they find out, wait a minute, what, the earth isn't 6,000 years old? I mean, what's going on here? And
right.
they go to their first science class. Although I was going to say we had a guy respond to my response to your tweet saying, well, I went to university and I still believe in a young earth creation. So there's lots of people out there who still believe young earth. And I responded, I said, really? This isn't a joke, right?
Yeah.
You really believe in young earth despite all the evidence, the scientific proof and everything. So yep, there's still young earth creationists out there. Absolutely.
Oh yeah. And I mean, mean, yeah, people stay in the system and they become a new generation of the same culture warriors fighting for the same things and digging their heels in. But I think that the problem with evangelicalism is the way that they view faith is very doctrinal and very propositional. And so it's the idea is to give your children this set of propositions and you have to buy into it 100%. If you don't, then you're completely out. It's a very dogmatic way of looking at faith. And so children who are raised in that, they either, you know, buy into the system 100%. And then, like you said, when they go up to college and they encounter a dissenting worldview, then they completely break away from that faith and lose their faith altogether. Or they dig in their heels and they continue to perpetuate that worldview that they were born in. And sometimes they live with a lot of cognitive dissonance and they really struggle to be able to have meaningful relationships with people who don't believe in the same way as they do.
They're trying to convert them or proselytize them. Or apparently this guy who responded to my tweet, I read some of his other tweets on his profile and it was all, we believe the Bible is the inspired and inerrant word of God and all that kind of thing. So obviously, as you say, he's doubling down. And he's saying, what's young earth creationism is true. I was thinking too, when you said that, you know, I was a preacher. I was a pastor for 12 years. I went to Bible college, seminary, and my specialty was actually homiletics, you know, preaching. And that key word that you said was propositions, because the way we were taught to preach in Bible college and seminary was your sermon has to have a main propositional point, one point that you drive home over and over and over. So is it, like you said, we're taught how to preach that way. So people growing up in church, this is the kind of sermons that they listen to week in and week out, year in and year out. And so is it any wonder that it's a propositional doctrinal faith?
Exactly. And the problem with that is that's not what life is like. Life is not propositions. There's lots of gray and lots of nuance and lots of flexibility in the way that we experience the world, in our relationships, in what happens in our own life experiences. And so as human beings, inevitably, we're going to encounter things that are experiences that are outside of those propositions. And then we're not given the tools to deal with that when we face them because we were raised in the kind of faith that it was all or nothing.
I've said many times it's a house of cards because If the stakes are so high for people in this system, you pull one card out and the entire thing comes crashing down. So like you say, it's all or nothing. So of course they have to defend it at all costs because the stakes are literally too high. It's all or nothing. It's so important. That's why they're, you know, defending the inerrancy of the Bible and authority of the scriptures and things like that. Because if it were to be shown that it had an error, even the smallest fraction of an error, their whole faith is destroyed. The implications are too high to even consider the possibility of a mistake, because that would mean God was a liar, and on and on it goes. The whole thing, you're going down this rabbit hole, and I became an atheist now. I guess that's what happened.
Right,
my whole faith was destroyed.
And it's not just about their spirituality and their religion either, because they don't get the chance to develop resilience in life. And so emotionally, I think a lot of evangelicals are kind of stunted because they just don't have the resilience to cope with the realities of what life gives us.
Yeah, you see that, especially with homeschooled kids, I think a lot. You know, they're socially, for one thing, socially very awkward in many cases. They don't know how to interact with other people just on that level because they've been in this sheltered, very closeted environment with their mom or dad who was homeschooling them in this Christian environment. And then they get out in the real world. And as you say, they don't have the tools socially to cope with just building normal relationships with other people.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So maybe we could go back a little bit. We talked a little bit beforehand, before we started recording, about hearing your backstory. How did you come into evangelicalism and then how did you get out? Were you born and raised in Taiwan? You said you lived in the States for a period of time as well. So can you kind of give us your thumbnail sketch of Cindy's story?
Sure. I was born and raised in Taiwan, and I was born and raised into an irreligious family, actually. My parents were not religious in any way, but they decided to send me to a school for missionary children. And so this is an international school that's set up by missionaries in Taiwan who want to serve the children of missionaries, but they do allow locals to be a part of the school as long as they hold a foreign passport. So it's technically an international school. So I was introduced to a brand of Christianity that was very zealous because, I mean, these are people who gave up their comforts, their home, their families to come all the way over to Taiwan to evangelize the people here, right? And so those were the kinds of people who converted me. They shared the gospel with me and I became a Christian when I was about 12 years old. And then I continued to be in that school, which the ethos I would describe as conservative evangelical. And I bought into it 100%. I was very enthusiastic. I was very on fire, as we say. And I ended up going to an evangelical college and an evangelical seminary, and I actually went into full-time missionary vocation after that. So I was way, way deep into it.
Oh, yeah. So was I. I was going to say, the whole thing about missions, that's a huge one, isn't it? As you say, because the Bible college that I went to in Portland, in Oregon, they were known as a mission-sending college. They viewed it as a missionary, that's the highest vocation you can have as a Christian. A pastor is okay, yes. But as you say, you're still living in, let's say, the United States with all the comforts of home and everything else. It's the missionaries, right. And they really, really pushed it. We used to have missions week. They would cancel classes for an entire week in the autumn term, and it was mandatory. You had to go to every session every day of the week. If you skipped it, you were in trouble. And, pushed it and pushed it and pushed it really hard. So yeah, missions is a big
definitely
feature.
Glorified.
Oh, absolutely. Definitely.
Yeah. So that was the environment that I grew up in. Lucky me.
Lucky you.
And, so after I went off into the mission field, you know, because I stayed in that bubble, and that's the thing with people who grew up in these kinds of environments, is we were raised to be very afraid of the secular world.
Oh, yeah. Very black and white.
So it was always like, oh, you were in the world, but not of the world, right? And so I felt like even though I was adulting or whatever in the real world, you know, in my heart and my spirituality was still very much closed off to other ideas. And so in that sense, I remained in this conservative evangelical bubble, even though physically I was out in the real world. So it took me a long time to begin to deconstruct. And even when I did deconstruct, it was just a little bit at a time because it was all I could handle. It's like the house of cards thing. I couldn't afford to let the house of cards all fall down. Sometimes in hindsight, I feel like it all happened very quickly, but I think the reality was it was slowly, you know, it was a slow process. And I just began to rethink, like I was saying, I began to experience life, right? And I could not hold some of the cognitive dissonance between what I was taught and what I was experiencing in real life. And so one example would be the fact that I am a woman. And evangelicals taught me that women cannot be leaders, that women's role is to be a mother and a helpmate to my husband. And I knew who I was. I experienced my own brain and heart and mind, and I knew that I could be a leader, and I knew that I was smart, and I knew I was a thoughtful person. And that was one of the first cognitive dissonance that I experienced. I was like, well, how do I reconcile this teaching that really was sexist with my actual lived experience? And so that's how every block of my deconstruction came down. It was something I experienced was different from the container that I had been taught. And so then I had to choose to either stay in that container or throw out the container. And for me, I chose to throw it out because I wanted to live my life as truthfully, as authentically as I possibly could. And so that led to me eventually abandoning honestly, a lot of the tenets of my faith. And I talk about this often, but abandoning your faith is not just about abandoning theology. It's about your identity and your community. And so it's been very traumatic at times and challenging. And it continues to be, although I think it gets easier and easier. I think when you're first deconstructing, you think, oh, I couldn't possibly say the truth about this. I couldn't survive that. I couldn't survive the public backlash. I couldn't survive what my family and friends would think of me. But then I've done it and I realized that I have survived. And now when I look back, it feels a little bit silly that I thought it was so hard to simply be true to myself.
But it is huge, as you say. And this is something I talked about with David Hayward, the Naked Pastor. He was on this podcast a while ago. And he said that he comes out of evangelicalism like you and me. And he said, the fact is, yes, you mentioned it. It's our very identity. It's so much more than just a series of beliefs to which we held intellectually. It affects he said it, and I never thought about it this way. He said, it affects every single area of our life. It's all pervasive. You know, every decision we made had to be filtered through prayer. What is it? God's will? Is this something I should do? It affects relationships. It affects our work, our decisions that we make about our careers and our educations and our sex lives and our marriages and where we buy our house and our vocations and parenting and child raising and on and on and everything. So he says, you can't just walk away from that in 5 minutes. This is a lifelong process of little steps, as you say. And you look back and you say, okay, I've come a long ways, actually, but it was scary. And it's a lifelong process. It's going to be with us for the rest of our lives. We're going to be deconstructing step by step.
Yeah. And it's still a struggle for me. I mean, I feel like it's not so much a struggle for me to tell the truth, about what I really believe now, because I am not really attached to any Christian institution anymore. So I don't have any real life consequences. But it still affects me in that I have friends from my childhood and my adolescence and my early career as a missionary. And so it's hard to know how to navigate some of those relationships.
Oh, yes.
But
we can often be disowned. I hear this a lot from ex-evangelicals. Their parents or family members, as you say, oftentimes either disown them outright or can be really, really cruel and manipulative. One of the stories that comes up a lot, or it's a theme, is that, let's say you're an ex-evangelical who's deconstructed and you have young children. Oftentimes your parents, the grandparents, are still in the system. They can do real manipulative things. They'll give kids Bibles. They'll sneak them things like that, or tracts. Or when the kids go to stay with the grandparents, they'll take them to church. Then now they have to go back and have this super awkward conversation with their parents and say, don't take my kids to your church. I'm just worried about their salvation, you know, that now that you're not a Christian anymore. And so it can get in some really weird and bizarre and downright uncomfortable. And yet you're still related to these people. They're still your parents. Right. They're still your relatives, you know, so. This is a very difficult thing. You can't just disentangle yourself from, well, people you're related to.
No. And I think what's helpful a little bit to me is you have to understand that for them, it really is life and death. It's eternal life and death.
Oh, yeah. The implications
situation. And so, I don't know, it helps me to have a little empathy. And it's not too hard to have empathy because I used to think that way.
I reach
back and just think, well, okay, this is their anxiety and I get it and I can empathize with it, but it's also really important to draw boundaries, especially if you want to protect your children from that kind of indoctrination. So I think, it is really tricky. And I think it looks different for every family, what it means to draw your boundaries and what it means to be respectful and understanding of where these people are coming from.
Well, and I think another aspect of this whole conversation is that a lot of evangelicals they're quite angry at people like you and me, because it's one thing to walk away from the church, I guess, and Christianity as well, perhaps. But when you actually start speaking out against the very system that they're still involved in, they can be, and I guess I can understand it. They're propping up the system. They don't see it that way, but they're very much within the system. And now you're attacking the very thing that's so hugely important to them in terms of community, yeah, relationships. Mm. And I get it. I really do. I mean, we've just watched my family go through a death in the family, and the church played a huge part in that whole process of the weeks leading up to my father-in-law's death and then his passing. And there was a lot of support. I mean, there's no denying it. And I'm glad that my mother-in-law had that, and that was her church, you know. So people were bringing meals and visiting and taking her out for coffee. And I'm not, you know, I'm not downplaying that any little bit at all. That's hugely important. But then you start criticizing that, and you're worse than the devil, I guess. You're the Antichrist.
Yeah, I guess for me, I don't think of it as I'm attacking them. I think of it more as I get to exist, and I get to tell my story, and I get to tell my experiences and what I believe to be good and true and right in this world, just as much as, you know, they do. And it's kind of to me, it's like a live and let live, right? And the reality is that evangelicals have a lot of power, and they sell a lot more books than ex-evangelicals, and they have a lot more coverage and media and a lot more resources. And so I don't know if they feel afraid of me. I feel like they don't have to be, because, you know, our voice is really just a whisper compared to the kind of power that they wield. So all I ask is that I get to tell my truth as well.
Yeah. Have you had any pushback so far from that kind of mainstream evangelical? You mentioned trolls on Twitter. Have you had people come against you and say, hey, this is anti-Christ, this is anti-Christianity? What kind of a pushback have you gotten?
Yeah, people were not happy about my calling evangelism to children as predatory. They didn't like that tweet.
I can imagine.
Yeah, but we can talk about this a little bit, because there is legitimate pushback. So one person said to me, well, if every religion, a Jew or a Muslim or a Buddhist, if every religion passing on the values to their child is predatory, then they thought that it was too harsh, right? And that's a fair question to ask. And how much passing on values, is passing on faith values predatory, I think, is the question that people are asking.
Yeah, it's a fair question.
And, you know, Twitter is not a great place for nuance. I tweeted that because I think tweets thrive on being slightly inflammatory.
Oh, yes.
So that was my tweet. I stand by it. I stand by it. I don't regret tweeting it, but it, of course, could use a little bit more unpacking. Of course, I think that if you are passing on, we all pass on values. Every parent inevitably pass on values, because just by raising your children, just by living in the same space, you're modeling your principles, you're modeling who you are and what you care about in the world. And that those are values.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so there's no getting away with that, and I don't want to deny that or think that there's some kind of moral vacuum that we can raise our children, nor do I think that's a good idea. But what is predatory is when you coerce your child, right? So with evangelicals, threatening that your child will go to hell unless they accept Jesus Christ into their heart, that's coercive.
And it's very traumatic.
Telling a child that they're sinful, that they're born sinful, that their inclination is to be sinful, that's also violation of their autonomy, their emotional autonomy, that they don't get to make mistakes and learn. It robs them of a development, of right to develop. Normally, certain practices that I believe are predatory.
Absolutely.
And sometimes that line is not clear. Sometimes it's not clear what's predatory and what's not. And I think that's our responsibility as adults and as parents, as people who care for children, to figure out what is honoring to them.
And when I was a kid, the trauma that I experienced in what you just described, I was raised in a fundamentalist evangelical church in Seattle, the Seattle area in Washington State. And I've shared this story on other podcasts and stuff, but when we were kids, they showed us that movie, A Thief in the Night, about the end times and the rapture and everything. And that one movie, I could probably say, traumatized me so, so deeply as a young kid of 10, 11, 12 years old. I was beyond frightened that I was going to miss the rapture and that would be it for me. I was going to go to hell then, according to the theology of the movie. If you missed the rapture, that was proof that you were not a true Christian. And therefore, that was it. You missed your chance. You're going to go through the tribulation followed by hell. And I was panicked. I was so terrified of missing the rapture. And I would pray that sinner's prayer thousands and thousands of times just to make sure that I was a Christian. So yeah, that's predatory to me. That's absolutely predatory to scare a kid like that. And the trauma lingers with a child for the rest of their lives. It's unbelievable. That's very predatory for sure.
Yeah. And it's definitely predatory when you do it to other people's children.
Absolutely. And yet they would say,
because their parents, I mean, did their parents give you consent to plant scary thoughts into their heads?
Yeah. But of course, they would say they're telling the truth.
Something I definitely take issue with.
That's the thing. They're just saying, well, that's what the Bible says. We're doing these kids a favor by evangelizing them young. And in fact, I can remember many conversations in Bible college where they talked about statistically, the largest number of conversions comes in young people. Most people don't, you know, you've heard this, I'm sure, before, that when you look at the statistics, they say child evangelism is hugely important because when adults grow to adulthood, they are less likely to convert once they're kind of set in their ways. But kids are much more open and malleable and suggestible. And therefore, that's why children's church and children's ministry and camps and youth groups are so important, because we got to get them while they're young. And so it's a massive part of the evangelical system, isn't it?
Yeah. It's basically preying on the vulnerability of a child who's yet to develop fully their cognitive processes and able to defend themselves against teachings that might be abusive.
This has got to be the supreme irony, isn't it? When you actually step back and look at this from the outside with a bit of objectivity, you start to see that the system is predatory. And this is exactly what Cindy is talking about. This is an indoctrination. This is unfair to children who don't psychological capacity to process this stuff. And like she said, deal with teachings that are actually toxic or abusive. Telling a child of 5, 6, 7 years old that he or she is going to hell, that they're born a sinner, and that God is angry with them. And yet there's some good news in there, but the child is traumatized. And as I've said before, the good news of evangelicalism, it actually turns out to be not very good news, because not only are you supposedly saved from hell, that's not really the good news. There's bad news in there too, that you might actually do something to lose your salvation. And this is something I was reminded of again the other day as we were driving up to Newcastle. We were listening to the episode that I did with Andrew Jasko, and he said, you look at it and you really think, okay, religion, it's a beautiful system from the point of view that not only does it tell you what's wrong with you, that you're a sinner, that you're going to hell, it also provides you the solution, the salvation piece. But it's not over then. It's a self-perpetuating system, because not only do you constantly have to go back and ask for forgiveness every time you offend God, there's always that chance that you might lose your salvation. So you're always living in fear. You're always living in anxiety. There's issues with depression and performance problems and all kinds of other issues that arise from this self-perpetuating and very damaging system. And we're injecting kids into this. We're raising them. We have. If you were like me, we raised our kids in the church. And now I've got to go back and apologize to them and say, I'm sorry for what we did to you as children. So this, again, is part and parcel, as I said in the introduction, of having to deal with the issues of deconstruction, disentangling ourselves from the system, because it affected, as David Hayward said, every single area of our lives, relationships, parenting, as well as all sorts of other aspects. So we have to go back and process these things. And this is why I'm super happy to bring you people like Cindy Wong Brandt. And in a couple of weeks, we're going to be listening to Dr. Josie McSkimming from Australia, as well as followed by an episode that I did with my sister Valerie. And you know, the fact that I'm bringing you such wonderful content from all these great women is just a fantastic thing to be able to do. And of course, remember that coming up soon is going to be the episodes, the live podcast that we did in Seattle with Stacey Ray. So those are going to be coming out as a podcast. I don't know how many episodes those are going to be, maybe two, maybe even three, depending on how long it goes. And I just love bringing you these fantastic women because they're so strong, they're so articulate, and we just absolutely need to hear their point of view. So I'm happy to be able to do that for you. Also, I was going to say that if you wanted to follow Cindy or myself on Twitter, all the information for her contact details as well as mine are always in the show notes. I will be seeing you next week then with Cindy Wong Brandt. Be sure and check in as we continue to deconstruct the predatory parenting of evangelicalism. I have been your host, as always, Dr. Clint Haycock. Thank you for joining me and Cindy, and I'll see you next Friday right here on Mindshift Podcast.